date, they have received only about one quarter of that amount. And now we take a look at these labor news updates with Workers Independent News Service.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The unemployment rate in the United States fell significantly in December compared to November. It dropped to 9.4% from 9.8% the month before. However, there is little to rejoice about because much of that drop has less to do with the companies opening their doors to new employees and creating jobs. But instead, more tragically, thousands of Americans giving up the job search game. Once they do that, they aren't measured by the Department of Labor and essentially become invisible. To see the true unemployment rate, one needs to look at the participation rate. If the participation rate remained around where it was in November, 64.5%, the unemployment rate would have only dropped to 9.6%. Instead, the participation rate fell by 0.2 percentage points, meaning roughly 4 million workers are out of the labor force and no longer counted as unemployed. White Americans are looking at an unemployment rate of 8.5%. That's not great, but it's not the worst. On the flip side, Black Americans are staring down an unemployment rate of 15.8%, a full 6% above the national average, and more than double the 7% unemployment rate of 2000. It looked like the tides were changing in March of 2010, when the Black unemployment rate dropped from 16.5% to 15.8%. But while job prospects slightly improved for other races, Black Americans have been stuck at that number. The AFL-CIO says December job numbers show that dramatic investment, not big spending cuts, is needed to create jobs in the numbers that workers need. Doug Cunningham has more on that story.
Government numbers show that 103,000 jobs were created in December, a disappointing number that doesn't come close to the new jobs creation needed. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says while the December drop in unemployment from 9.8% to 9.4% is welcome, net jobs growth remains inadequate. And we could see these paltry jobs numbers indefinitely, Trumka says, unless a bold commitment is made for investment in infrastructure modernization and jobs creation. By the AFL-CIO's accounting, there is an 11 million job gap between what we need and the jobs that were destroyed during the Bush administration and the Great Recession. The AFL-CIO says cuts pushed by Republicans in everything from Medicare and Social Security to transportation spending are exactly the wrong remedies for what ails U.S. jobs creation. AFL-CIO says those cuts threaten our economic future, and if we choose that path over investment, we will not see the robust jobs creation working people in America need.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp and Nell Abram. Our technical producer at KPFA in Berkeley is Scott Pham. Thanks to Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!, Tana Gais, and Inner Press Service, Nathan Moore, Julie Alexander, the FSRN Board and Steering Committee, and many others for relentless work to make sure FSRN stays on the air. And thank you for staying with us during these difficult times. Please visit fsrn.org/crisis today for more information on how you can help FSRN. Have a great rest of your day. In Washington, D.C., I'm Leanne Caldwell.
You are listening to WESU Middletown, 88.1 on your FM band or online at wesufm.org.
Solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can motivate your audience.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can teach your children.
I can boost your bottom line.
I can add value to your workplace.
I could be a loyal and productive employee.
but I can't put my skills to work for your organization.
If I'm not given the opportunity.
If you don't recognize my talents and ability.
If you don't hire me.
If you don't have an open mind and a workplace that's open to everyone.
If you don't realize that America works best when everybody works.
What can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
You can remember that it worked.
It's what people can do.
It's what people can do that matters.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans.
You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown, and I'm G. Cherry, live in the studio here. Got the strawberries in the house. Happy to be here on the airways. I have a special guest also, Al Bauer, in the studio, and he's a local author. And we're going to open up with a little bit of some musical interlude as soon as I get this technical glitch that I'm having a slight problem with. So bear with me. Here we go. All right, good. I got it. See, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard to be in the studio and not be able to hear yourself in the headphones. I had a guest last week that he couldn't hear himself, and it's very disconcerting. So I was just having that problem. Now I can hear myself, and I feel so much better. So we're going to open with some live music, and got the strawberries in the house, got Tim Sparks on guitar, got Poets and Pedalists on percussion, and got Steve Farr over there on bass, and we're going to open up with some music before we get to our very awesome guest here. And we're always broadcasting live here at WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. You cannot escape the bad for the good. No, the good for the bad. There are two sides to the coin and two sides to the story. Sets us free from the fear of the darkness. It is what it is, let us place no judgment upon isness, lest us exile. This matter all found reality.
It's up and it's down and it's all around. Let us not hold on to the joy, nor the pain. Rather, let us be like the wind. A sweet summer's breeze or a tornado. Oh yes, we need both, I hate to say so. Great mother, teach us we live to die and we die to live. So breathe deep and be grateful that your heart beats. Whether it's your soul that's crying or your heart that leaps with joy, we know both feelings, each and every one of us. There's a dark side and a light. You cannot have the good without the bad, or the bad without the good. It's a light of truth that frees us. Let's just accept the isness of what is.
You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. I'm G. Cherry, live in the studio. We got the Strawberries. We were just doing a little jam. That was actually an improvisational jam. With the lyrics, the way they come to me, they fuse in and out of things that I've written and things that just kind of inspire me coming from the day that I've had or the week that I'm having or something like that. But light and truth and dark and good and bad are something that I'm always mingling with. So in the studio, I have a special guest in the house. I got Al Bauer. Is that right? Say hello, Al.
Well, hello, Al.
And so how's your headphone feeling?
My headphone's fine.
Excellent. I always like to make my guests as comfortable as I possibly can. Here in radio, it's, you know, it moves fast. And I'm running around. There's been a couple occasions where my guests are like, whoa. So Al Bauer is a local Middletown artist, writer. And you've been in these parts for your whole life, right?
No, half of it.
Half of it. That's right. We had this conversation before a while back when I was writing for the Middletown Press. You've been here for a good 20 years or so.
Closer to 30.
30. See, I'm off on that.
Oh, you forget I'm old.
Well, you were, you went to Middlesex Community College back when it was
transitioning from the middle school to its present campus.
That's right. That's really exciting.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then continued on and got your bachelor's at Wesleyan.
Correct.
In
theater.
Theater. Yeah, you're definitely a theatrical person.
Oh, yeah. You should take one in that one.
Yeah, I'll say so. I'll say so. So, Al and I met a couple years ago down at Broad Street books.
And it was when Ravi Shankar was the premier poet at the opening, I believe it was, I think it was April of 08.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
And I've only missed 1 month since.
Yeah, and since that time, in the couple of years since then, you are now hosting an event at Green Street Arts Center.
Correct.
Writers Out Loud.
Yes, I co-host. It's one of those rare things, an open mic for prose readers.
So
because
prose.
There's so many poetry readings, but.
And prose. Now, some laymen may think poetry and prose are one and the same. So what.
Oh, God, don't ask me to define the difference because.
I know.
I just do it. I don't know the technicalities,
it.
But. I never thought of myself as a poet until you and Brian Machar gave me a break back when. So ever since I've been writing 3 poems a month just
nice.
For Broad Street.
That's great.
And just incidentally have managed to publish a few recently.
Yeah, you've been on fire lately.
Mm-hmm.
Getting works published in some of the publications. Let us know.
Gosh. I mentioned Ravi Shankar.
Yes.
He started an online magazine.
The Drunken Boat.
Drunken Boat, which I'm still waiting, but sometime this year they're publishing one of my short
nice.
Stories.
Nice, that's an honor.
Me.
So they're publishing a short story?
Yes.
Nice.
Very amazing. I've hit a few print magazines, originally Down in the Dirt. They've taken 4 things. One of my best short stories appeared in the summer of 08 in Mature Years, which happens to be a publication of the United Methodist Church of all things.
Oh, I remember you talking about this. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I have my conservative, family-oriented side, and so I used it then. Since then, I've gotten a bit weirder and explored some not-so-nice things. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I write a lot about all of the above.
Oh, that's very interesting reading, though.
Well, like I said, I'm older. 61, to be exact. But I've had a lot of cross-generational touching.
Yeah.
And with family people that I have never even met,
mm-hmm.
like great nieces, great grand nieces, stuff like that. It's been marvelous, and I get inspiration from the air. It's everywhere, sort of like what you're saying
yeah,
about the lyrics.
It is everywhere.
So, right now, an awful lot of publishing is happening online. So
mm-hmm.
I've been exploring that, and that's where my biggest success has been lately. Various online. Magazines and even a couple of book publishers
nice.
Have accepted things. Even poetry.
That is awesome. And I'd love to get those links from you that I will post
I can do that.
On the forum here at WESU. We have a forum. If you go to www.wesufm.org and you go to the forum and you look up J Cherry Presents, I will put on my playlist. So we had Al Bauer in a studio and put a link to those.
That would be great.
Those websites. So
I could do that.
That would be really nice.
There are a lot of them. Blue Lake Review. It's really funny. Trying to publish is always difficult, but you have to keep, it's like fishing, you have to keep casting your line into the water. Sooner or later, if you're halfway decent, an editor will connect with something that you've done.
Yeah.
I recently had Blue Lake Review as an online magazine that took the first story I wrote when I retired from full-time work.
Mm-hmm.
It, which was actually a rewrite from the early 70s. I've sent it out up to roughly 40 places.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this guy just fell in love with it, raved about it, and said, I've got to have this. And in less than a week, it was online.
Oh, that's so amazing. And what a great story that is. Because I think that sometimes people get discouraged and they think, oh, I haven't gotten published, or I keep getting these
Rejections. I've had over 400 rejections.
And you haven't let it stop you at all.
Never.
That's awesome.
As I said, it's a matter of finding the editor who's...
That's right.
Pardon the pun. On the same page.
Yeah. Because there's so many different people out there, and you never know, and don't ever take it personal if you don't get that first shot. Because, okay, so this is a story that you wrote a while back. Send it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom. Oh. Never give up.
Never
give up. Nice.
It keeps one going.
Absolutely. It sure does.
Well, like I said before, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Some dozen and a half things I've penned have been based on my wife,
uh-huh,
to one degree or another. Uh-huh. Another half dozen were her idea.
Uh-huh.
She didn't know it. Just she would say a comment in a conversation, and I'd write it down. Next thing I know, I've got a plot. It's just everywhere. Just marvelous stuff. I mentioned sex, drugs, rock and roll. I'm also a smoker, so I was delighted. I wrote a piece called Smoked, which has been accepted. It's, again, should be out this year.
Oh, neat.
But it's about the progression of anti-cigarette smoking,
uh-huh,
and all the progression of restrictions on it. And I found an editor, fell in love with the thing. He
nice.
Must be a smoker, because we feel more and more like criminals every week.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pieces, like I said, is one of, it's kind of about my wife, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Rebooting. It's one of two things I've published twice.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time, it was an online magazine called Sangam, which no longer exists.
Yeah.
So I sent it to another editor and explained that I want it available online. So he said, okay.
Nice.
So that's been on there twice. I had a poem published for the second time last week. And a few months ago, another short story for the second time. It's just one thing just after another just keeps happening.
Yeah. Never give up and keep pursuing that writing, that muse that's everywhere. It's in the air.
It certainly is. I'm delighted that the strawberries are here this evening. I didn't know that was going to be the case, but it kind of ties in with the very first piece that I thought I'd like to read.
Oh, we would love that.
I think they'll get a charge out of it. I know, I do.
And so,
whenever you're ready.
Oh, yes, we are definitely ready. You guys are listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. This is, in the business, they call music while you're having an interview a music bed. And this music bed is a live bed. All right, it's all yours, Al.
I got this idea from a memory. My best friend many years ago was among other things, a guitar player. And he and his brother-in-law used to play clubs. I thought about it and I said, I don't know today's music. So I had to, as an old fart, adapt that. And I came up with this piece I call Fretting. I feel the most alive playing an axe, and my social life and connections with women are in bars. So I play clubs and dives with Georg on drums and Henry on bass. We're the flashbacks. We seldom do gigs with patrons under 40 due to our music choices, so we're used to dating older women. Except Georg, he's got an old lady. I'm 23, the other guys are 24. On the rare occasions we get a chance with a girl close to our age, Henry and I compete for her. He has the edge because he's our lead singer. They do tend to get the most attention. What we perform depends on the joint. We like older clientele that expect us to be a power trio like Hendrix or Cream. In those places, Georg jacks up the percussion. Ginger Baker would be proud. I get to wail during those sets, my Gibson SG filling space with Hendrix, Trower, Clapton, Led Zepp. We always start sets acoustically, so I break out my Ovation and go wherever I feel like. If the audience responds well, we hang there a while. If not, it's back to the SG, which usually happens. We love 60s and 70s rock and roll, even though we're young. Headbanging, grunge, rap, forget it. We do music with melody intact. My taste leans toward Carlos Santana. Some jazz dude nicknamed him Melody Man for good reason. Carlos wails with the best of them, but music structure is always important. I adapted his mastery of the sustain to stuff like Trower's Bridge of Sighs. Unfortunately, I can't find too many audiences willing to put up with that. Henry holds the center. He's got a David Clayton Thomas thing going with hints of Joplin. Georg sets up on the left. He's shy and glues his gaze to his drums. On the right, I force myself not to play Flash Cat. We're equals, trading off solos once every set. Georg does his Baker, Henry his Jaco Pastorius lead bass thing. I get to throw in Carlos's Sunlight on Water, which nobody knows, but everybody gets into. It's that exquisite. Last Saturday, we were playing at Elks Club, large room full of customers in their 50s and 60s. We started easy with Beatles, Birds, Simon and Garfunkel. During an Eagles tune, a girl came in and took a seat right in front of me where some old farts had left. I mean real old Tommy Dorsey types. The brunette fox stuck out because she was the only one in the room who looked 20-ish. Not to mention her piercings. Lower lip, right cheek, left nostril, both eyebrows. That image conflicted with her blouse. It was buttoned all the way, including the top. I'm not into piercing, but hoped to hook up with someone my age rather than another older woman. I eyeballed her during a Steely Dan number, the one where I combined my Skunk Baxter with two-string chords from Wes Montgomery. The babe was into it big time. Her sparklers locked onto me like I was some kind of god. Of course, I smiled at her, wondering if she was getting it. Nobody ever gets my style, except the occasional player who happens to be in the venue we're at. This chick never looked at Henry, although he flirted with her like a young David Crosby. I was her star. She barely sipped her drink, some pink thing, while I strummed through Billy Joel, picked Bob Seger, and sustained notes forever in our first set closer, Santana's Europa. Henry and Georg headed to the bar. I went to the Fox's table, rested my hands on the chair back opposite her, and said, "You like?" "Syrupy," she said. "I heard you were going to be here tonight. Never saw you before, but a good friend said I had to check you out." She was right. I breathed and cocked my head. "Thanks, I'm not used to compliments." "Bullshit, sit." I pulled out the chair. "Can I have a drink." "You play great. I want you to play me." Sitting across from her, I thought, this girl's gorgeous and doesn't expect me to work for it? Life is good. I feigned ignorance. "Play you?" Beauty glanced around to be sure no one was watching us, then unfastened three buttons of her shirt. She pulled the sides apart to reveal some of her tattoo, the top of the neck of an Ovation. My eyes leaped from her chest to her deep browns. Grinning, she said, "Yes, it's the whole guitar, two-thirds scale. You have the skills to play it right." Imagining the round ovation bottom on hers, I said, "What's your name?" "Not that it matters, but call me Tat." "Yeah, that figures. It doesn't refer to the two. It's short for Tatiana." She sipped a little of her drink. "Well, are you into it?" "Am I?" "Of course." "Good. When you're done playing here, we'll go to my place. This time only." "What if you like my playing?" "Doesn't matter. I never do repeats. By the way, don't even think of using a pick." Watching Tat undress slowly was phenomenal. I know what ovations look like, but hers was impeccable. All the curves in the best places and all the parts properly aligned. While she undressed me, I spotted a trumpet on her bedside stand. "You play?" "I like Al Hurt a lot. He taught me triple tonguing." She told the truth. "Now it's my turn." She sat sideways on my lap. "Start by going west." I tickled her belly with thumb and forefinger while fretting her chest, hearing Montgomery's music. 20 bars into it, she said, "Do you do Gabor Zabo?" "Certainly." I switched tracks. Her hips began gyrating. A few dozen bars more. "To Saint L'Ouverture." She was on my page, except I thought it was too early to go Carlos. Tat stayed with it a long time, squirming with her eyes shut. Her eyelids snapped up. "Tell me you know A Lotus on Irish Streams. From the Inner Mounting Flame. How do you even know this music?" I was still playing Santana. She panted. "Same as you. Just do it. John McLaughlin ain't easy, you know. Do it!" I did, having no clue how such a woman thought I could. Like I said, McLaughlin's mastery is hard to duplicate, but Lotus is in my top five numbers. Tat hung in there for the whole thing, writhing, wiggling, and squealing. It's a long tune. At the end, she exploded off my lap onto the floor, her entire body snaking about. I grinned to myself, thinking, "Damn, I'm good. I'm glad I learned my licks from Carlos and the boys in the back room." Tat sent me packing an hour before dawn. As she let me out her door, she shook her head. "I should have tried your bass player." "Why?" She'd stuck a pin in my ego. "Stronger fingers." She smiled and shut the door.
You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and live in the studio with Al Bauer, and he was just sharing one of his short stories, Fretted. Whoa. Whew, it's racy in here, or hot in here, shall I say, steamy. And the strawberries were so nice to provide some musical background. Thank you so much. We're going to take a very short break with a very important public service announcement, so stay tuned. You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. I'm Jay Cherry, and this is the voice of the city.
The CDC estimates that 1.1 million Americans are living with HIV or AIDS. An estimated 640,000 of these are not receiving treatment. I'm Susan Crosby, President Emeritus of Women in Government, and I'm here to share an important health message with you. The statistics are startling. 56,000 new cases of HIV are diagnosed each year in the United States. One in four new infections are in women. African Americans account for 49% of all new HIV or AIDS cases. On behalf of Women in Government, an organization of state policymakers, I want to urge you to talk to your doctor or local AIDS service organization today. Talk about getting the care, support, and treatment you deserve. There are effective medicines available that can help you manage your HIV. To learn more, visit womeningovernment.org.
Funding provided by the Bristol-Myers Squibb Company.
You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. I'm live in the studio. I got Al Bauer in the house, and he just read one of his short stories. Now, was that one published, fretted?
Not yet.
I'm hopeful. So how long have you been writing?
Oh, gosh. Actually, my mom tells me I started when I was 8 years old. But my routine, I took early retirement from CVH specifically to have time to write because it's been haphazard all these many years.
Yeah.
But it's almost 5 years now.
So it's been 5 years you've been able to write full time.
Every morning. Although with all studying the marketing, and I find myself having to give myself some mornings off just to market myself.
And when you're marketing yourself, what are some of the things that you're doing?
I started with with an annual book of all things, the Novel and Short Story Writer's Market, which was useful. That's how I found that Mature Years magazine I mentioned earlier. Then some writers group friends suggested Poets and Writers magazine. Three or four of my stories got published because of the list in the back of there. But they also have an online list of so-called literary magazines. So I went into that. Mm-hmm. Now I most often use an online thing called Duotropes Digest.
Duotropes Digest.
Yes, because they list new markets, markets that have just started to accept again because they're sporadic, particularly college magazines don't accept year-round. So that way I get to keep track of schedules and get an idea. All these places give you an idea what editors are looking for.
Nice. And you've been on fire with stuff you've been getting published lately. So how many pieces have you got out there in the works?
So far, I'm up to 38, but I'm 32 have actually been published, 6 have been accepted, and I'm waiting for them to go.
That's really exciting. And it's you don't have an agent. You are your agent.
So far. I also found out about an anthology contest from the University of Pittsburgh about 6 months ago. So I collected a bunch of my short stories, threw them in the snail mail, not expecting to win, but if I can get any attention from one person of influence, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just this morning online, I found another brand new book contest for, not for fiction though. It's specifically for essays/memoirs.
Nice.
And I looked through my stuff, and I have enough. The deadline's June 1st, so I'm going to enter that, too. I'll just do a lot of rewrite.
There you go.
But that's a constant effort.
Nice.
It's worth every moment.
Yeah.
And as I said before, when I first retired, it was a struggle. But when I was a kid, my first mentor was Ray Bradbury, who I've given homage to many times. And he used to write a short story every day.
Wow.
That's what I said. I'm not that ambitious. What I set my goal was to do a piece every week, whether it be a short story, a poem, a novel chapter, a memoir, a book chapter of whatever type, because I'm working on 12 books. long story. But I'm roughly a year, actually I'm over a year ahead of the schedule.
Good for you.
You know, because I just stick to it.
Yeah.
It's all about making it a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I, God knows I've had more inspiration right in this building.
Yeah.
But, listening to poets not only inspire me to do verses, but subliminally, a lot of the work that musicians and poets do becomes a part of my internal writer's toolbox and mm-hmm. comes out in prose.
Nice.
Which makes it real good. I'm babbling.
No, you're not babbling at all. I'm totally interested. I love it. Now, here's a question I have. Now, you're very prolific right now. Is there ever a time where you feel like a blockage or something, or you're too attached to something, and what do you do to overcome that?
Turn the page.
There you go.
I've never, in all nearly 5 years now, every morning I turn on my laptop, I have never once experienced the blank page thing that writers often talk about.
Yeah.
A writer's block. If I go to a particular piece I felt like working on and it doesn't come to me right mm-hmm. away, I just X out of it
yeah.
and go through my works and say, all right, let me see if I can rewrite this one.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't feel like a rewrite. Usually I can just do a first draft
mm-hmm.
in a matter of an hour and a half of something.
Yeah. Nice.
And the hardest part of writing is rewrite.
Yeah, I find that myself.
I do it constantly.
Rewriting is a thing. That's the hardest part. As a journalist, I find that to be my most difficult time when mm-hmm. I'm writing is rewriting. What you know? Where? What? I want to leave this in. This paragraph is so important, and you can drive yourself crazy. So I just imagine.
There's an old cliche on that. I forget who said it. Kill your children. Literally, like I've had paragraphs. I don't want to let that go. It's
yeah.
just so beautiful.
I love that.
But it doesn't work in the piece, so bye-bye.
And you know what I have done, and I'm doing this today, I'm struggling with a story that I was working on because I'm very attached to it, which I find that sometimes, even in journalism where you have to be objective and stuff, you do get excited and attached
sure.
to what you're writing. And I had this paragraph, and I've been like suffering with that paragraph all day long.
I know the feeling.
And I need to just bury that paragraph. And that, I find, is a hard part for me. So
it is. It's difficult.
Kill your children. Oh, not really.
Not literally.
Not literally. We're not proclaiming that. You know, we're talking about how attached you get to your work.
Another thing you asked earlier about a novel I was working on, that's on the back burner. I've dabbled in just about every form imaginable. Even songwriting. Ooh, did I say that?
Nice.
However, I'm most comfortable and most love short story mm-hmm. form. Not that it's easy by any means. But one of the big movements today is what they call flash fiction.
Flash fiction? What is that?
Which is, well, half of the editors say it's a complete short story under 1,000 words.
Wow.
The other half say under 500.
Wow. I mean, that's a real flash.
Yeah. And I have a friend locally who comes to Green Street on occasion
uh-huh.
who does, I guess you'd call it microfiction. His stories tend to be about 5 lines or less.
Wow.
And Narrative Magazine has an ongoing contest for 6-word stories, which supposedly Hemingway invented.
Wait a minute. A 6-word story?
Yes.
For me, 6 words is the beginning of a story, not the whole enchilada.
Not even for me. There was one example, I can't remember the lady that wrote it, something to the effect of, wanted him badly, got him. Darn.
Wow.
It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a resolution. It's weird, but I don't go there.
That's I've never heard of this, so you learned That certainly is.
However,
flash.
Taking courses at Green Street, we had Sari Rosenblatt mm-hmm. would hand out random photographs to each of us, 10 or 12 people in the course, and say, okay, you have 5 minutes. Write a story about this picture.
Wow, in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you have no time to think.
No.
That's a good thing sometimes.
Yes. So what happened was, I did not like the idea of flash fiction, but by doing those exercises, it forced the brain to work.
Yeah.
And actually, of, I don't know, a dozen or so of those things, I actually have two that I like a lot.
Nice.
And I've reworked a couple and sent them out, and one got published.
Good for you. That's awesome. So you got another story to share with us?
This is 176 words.
All right. And is that that's flash fiction?
Exactly.
I think I need more than 6 words.
Oh, I know I do.
Oh, that's amazing.
But as I said earlier, many of about 18 of my pieces are about my wife. And I woke up in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m., which happens a lot because we have a dachshund who likes to go out and do her business. So she
at 3 a.m.?
Yes.
And you still have this dachshund?
almost 9 years now.
God bless you.
Anyway, and so basically this is a true story. I just changed the names to protect the guilty. Like a lot of my material, most fiction is based in fact.
Absolutely.
At least 1 foot anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought I'd give it a shot. Like I said, it's half a page long, mm-hmm. double-spaced.
Mm-hmm.
So.
There you go.
Okay. Petals. As usual, Sandy Dog wakes me at 3 a.m. to let her out on her lead to do her business. I make use of the time to empty ashtrays, sip Gatorade, and smoke a cigarette. I lean on the kitchen counter, waiting for him to yip to come in. I smile at the single yellow rose in Gina's bud vase next to the coffee pot. When I put it there 3 days ago, I told her, "This is you decorating our home." My smile stops as I count one, two, three petals on the counter. I think each of those is a stage of her cancer's progression. Tears well. I squint, then wipe them in time to see another petal fall. Sandy yips. I unsnap her lead. She cocks her head at me, questioning. A new stage. I don't know if I can take this one. I snuff out my butt and light another. Now sitting in the bedside chair, I'm waiting for my eyes to adjust to the dark so I can watch Gina sleep peacefully.
Wow. And so few words. You just deeply touched me. That's really beautiful. It. Yeah.
If it touches the real, it touches people. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to touch people.
Yeah.
The hardest thing is, but as you said, in so few words, I find myself doing more of these very short pieces.
Yeah.
I'm most comfortable at around 30 pages. I get to develop characters and interactions
yeah, yeah.
and make a plot build and come to a crescendo and that sort of thing. But that's valid.
You did that in the 156 words you were saying?
Thereabouts.
I mean, just say it was just a page. And in that was so much story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's amazing. Amazing.
And my background in theater helps too.
Yeah, the way that you deliver your writing is that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about seeing you that day over when we first met that time, and I was just like, wow.
It's funny because I struggled 3 or 4 years back with dialogue,
uh-huh.
meaning I was using too much. mm-hmm. in my fiction. And it was pointed out to me. He's saying, why don't you write plays? It's all dialogue. So I go out of my way now to try to minimize dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, Sari Rosenblatt said, I love the way you just go for it. Everyone else is writing pure narrative, and they're afraid to put anything in quotation marks.
Yeah.
And you just go for it, and it works.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of finding the right balance for the individual story.
Mm-hmm.
The story writes itself, pretty much.
I always tell myself that. Let the story write itself. You know, stop. Pull your head out of the linear world. Go ahead.
The sunless place.
The sunless. Yeah. Yes. Pull your head out of the dark and, you know, let the story write itself. That's a great quote there.
Well, like I said earlier, I never have a blank page problem. I can zap a first draft off pretty much any time.
Yeah.
It's a matter of going back and crafting it.
Yeah.
That's where the real work comes in.
And one of the things that you do by co-hosting the Writers Out Loud, you guys are sharing. I remember talking to you about the classes you were taking at Green Street Art Center and how much you appreciated going and sharing your work and taking the critique and just the information around
Definitely.
You.
Yeah. And I'm pretty much all about networking.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a healthy ego and all, but basically, I've met so many great people. I won't mention some pedalists who have influenced me. To explore in different directions than what I was at that moment.
Yeah.
A few of the regulars at Writers Out Loud at Green Street are memoirists, which I never had any interest in whatsoever. But then I look at my fiction, and so much of it is based in fact.
Yeah.
So I said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And the latest contest I mentioned that I'm planning on entering a few months from now is going to be all memoirs, an entire book of memoirs.
Wow.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Seeing how a lot of fiction is
based in reality.
Right. A lot of my pieces, I've just changed the names and written very close to the reality of a situation.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much to adapt an actual story, a real story, to a fictional one, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that I graduated from Wesleyan. The most influential professor I had was a wonderful man named Fritz de Boer, who never tolerated anything negative from me. I loved the man dearly. And one of my short stories that's gotten the best editorial response is actually barely fiction. I changed the name, but it's my personal homage to Mr. de Boer.
Oh, nice.
You know? I call it The Rule of Three.
The Rule of Three.
It's very lengthy. But yes, he taught me The Rule of Three. It has to do with comedy.
Oh, neat. So
and theater. In other words, if I think in the story I even used the example he did, there was a ladder on the set on stage, and one of the characters almost walks under it and stops himself and walks around. Then a moment later, he bumps into it and skitters around it.
Wow.
At that point, it's not funny.
Yeah.
The third time it is. The playwright would come up with, or the actor, a shtick.
Yeah.
For the third time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that repetition is totally predictable. And what Fritz de Boer taught me was it's not only theater, that's how life is.
Yeah.
The rule of three applies. And I've been pondering on that for the last 30-odd years.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah, he is right.
If you ponder on it, you'll find it. The rule of three works.
Absolutely does. Absolutely does. We're getting low on time, so I was wondering if you had anything else that you want to share. I love listening to your stories.
I have a pretty bizarre piece. Where is it? Oh, that's in... Eek.
So we got the strawberries there, so don't worry. That's the wonderful thing about having these guys in the house. So I'm just going to lift them up a little bit and let them kind of do a musical interlude while...
The piece I'm going to do is quite short, but it's definitely different.
Okay, so you're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown, live in the studio with Al Bauer and the strawberries doing a little musical interlude while we get ready for one last story. Listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. Live strawberries in the house, Tim Sparks on guitar, Sympetilis the poet doing some percussion tonight, and Steve Farr on the bass, Al Bauer live in the studio, and he's got one more he's going to read for us. So we're all set to go. All right, what's the title of this piece?
Blanks.
Blanks.
Yes. A very short piece because I know we're running out of time. The important stuff's missing. Like the TV ad showing no fish in a tank, no water in a swimming pool, no dots on dice. If I took my kids to the zoo to watch rhesus monkeys laugh at them, how would I explain an empty cage? They'd think I'm insane if I took them to a library with no books. I've tried to raise them with values and heart. Yesterday, I took Gloria, 11, and Gregory, 10, to an art museum. One room was being renovated. Gloria asked, "Where are the pictures?" That's when I made the connection. I pointed to the sign to answer her, but synapses inside my skull zapped to attention. The symbols weren't there. I imagined that empty pool. Look before you leap. I laughed. Gregory glared like I'd lost it. I don't see anything funny. The thoughts were new to me, so I didn't try to explain to him. Oh, you're right. Sometimes your pop's a little nuts. I gave him a blank, a circumnavigation, a non-communication, an excuse. We moved on to the surrealist room, where the largest canvas caught their eyes. Dolly's painting of a fruit bowl on a beach caused levels of symbolism to collide with my consciousness. Gloria said, "Nice dog, Dad." Gregory said, "What dog?" I said, things aren't as they seem. Gloria glanced at her brother. What, dog? How can you miss it? She went to the picture and outlined the canine with her hand. My son still didn't see it, which frightened me further. He asked Gloria if she saw the face. She mocked him in retaliation. There's no face. You're making it up. I thought, is it that we see what we want to see? No. Dolly's a realist. He's displaying the world as it is, a shell game. Kids, all three are there. Like Father, Son, and Holy Ghost? I mentally slapped myself for that connection. I persevered and stayed until all of us perceived the three images. Now opened, my mental eyes wouldn't shut. Driving to work on the highway this morning, I chuckled at the speed limit sign, 65. I, and most others, drove 78. Some sped by me at 90. I scoffed at the sign, thinking, it's like the Fruit Bowl. We drivers are the larger reality, the face. The law, with all its ramifications, is the dog. I wondered about the beach, but reached no conclusions. Sitting at my desk this morning, I formed similar parallels, reaching upward from my company with its subcontracting situation to the larger corporations we support. I pondered their positions in the scheme of things. Dolly, you devious devil. A moment ago, I opened my lunch sandwich to shake pepper onto it. My eyes widened when I saw the Swiss cheese over the ham. The holes had implications, newly perceived symbolism. I realize that slavery is far more insidious than I suspected.
Thank you. Thank you, Al.
You're welcome.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the air. Thanks for coming down to the studio. Appreciate it very much.
All my pleasure.
I'm getting ready to head out of here, but I just wanted to do a quick reminder that you host the Writers Out Loud group every Thursday at Green Street Arts Center.
Actually, it's the second Thursday of every month.
So,
except this month, it's the third.
It's the third. I'm tongue twisted. Third Thursday this month. That's a
yes.
Third Thursday. This coming week, or yes. Is it this Thursday? Is it? Were we in the third Thursday already? No, we're still in the second. All right, so that's Writers Out Loud, and that's at Green Street Arts Center.
6:30 p.m.
6:30 p.m. Where you come on in and sign up for the list, and you get to
or just listen,
or just hang out and listen. Thank you again, very very much. Appreciate it. And so stay tuned. You're listening to WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. We got Bill Revel heading on up with Acoustic Blender. And we ready just on track one?
Hit that button.
All right. So I'm going to hit track one for Bill. And it's always a pleasure. See you all next week.
Thank you.
Hey, and welcome to Acoustic Blender. This is Bill Revel. It is Tuesday at 7:30, and they're talking about snow. Let's hear a little bit. But let's turn it on. Here we go.
It's the end of the day. The sky, it glows crimson, then darkens to gray. The miles fall behind me as the day fades from view. The hours grow longer since I've been with you. Some words come easy, but it's not true for me. More like small birds that sing secretly. From my open hand I toss them into the wind to fill up the hours till I see you again. Maybe all of the difference are the miles in between, but my heart knows its own way. My conscience is clean like the fly